You're listening to Trek FM.
Taking all these books?
I thought I'd take some light reading, in case I got bored.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Literary Treks, our books and comics discussion show. And I'm Christopher Jones, and with me as always is my esteemed colleague, knower of all things in Trek literature, Matthew Rushing. Hey Matthew, how are you doing this week?
Well Chris, I'm not gonna lie, it was a depressing weekend. 49ers lost the Super Bowl, but we're not going to talk about it anymore, so...
That's why my voice went down as I asked you that question, because, you know, I knew that for you it was a tough... It was an up-and-down game. You know, we talked a little bit on Twitter.
Yeah.
Talked a little bit on iMessage, and even the big Star Trek Into Darkness promotion didn't pull you out of it at the end.
You know, it almost helped, though. Star Trek Into Darkness promo... almost allowed the 49ers to engineer one of the greatest comebacks in Super Bowl history. When you get to the 5-yard line and you can't score, you know you got issues. So, disappointing, but hey, honestly, I think we're going to have a great year next year.
And let's not forget, things in the future, they turn out pretty well for San Francisco. You know, it's the home of Starfleet Command, and I think what you need to do is to prepare, is you need to grab this first book that we have up in news. It's the Star Trek Cross Stitch, Explore Strange New Worlds of Crafting book, and I think that you should combine your San Francisco 49ers with San Francisco Starfleet Command and, you know, put together a nice cross stitch.
Man, put those two logos together, man, that would be really nice. Kind of put that San Francisco 49er oval behind, you know, the Delta Shield, and maybe put a nice, you know, SF over the Delta Shield on top of that. Wow, this is a good idea, Chris. I like it.
I like it, yeah. I don't know if this pattern is really in the book or not, but it should be.
Well, I figure that if I can do every pattern in this book, then by the time that's done, I'll be good enough to create my own patterns. I mean, this book is going to have patterns like being able to cross-stitch on a pillow, Kronos, sweet Kronos, you know,
right.
Making sure that each of your dish towels is sufficiently embroidered with cross-stitching of your favorite Star Trek characters. I mean, this is just going to have a whole new dimension of geekdom to kitchens and bathrooms everywhere.
You know, what I find interesting about this book coming out is that for me, it sort of symbolizes the resurgence of Star Trek that we're seeing, because we used to have books like this, crafts and such, that were Star Trek related in the past, and things kind of died down for a long time. Suddenly, we're seeing all of these things, you know, the sticker books, we're seeing the visual dictionary, now we've got this cross-stitch book coming out. It's kind of exciting, actually.
I'm so glad that Star Trek has had a resurgence in non-fiction books. You know, it's something that you just said, it's been lacking for a long time. There used to be a lot of these kind of things. In fact, I don't know if I should share this or not, but I'm going to. I did just buy some Star Trek fabrics to turn into pillowcases. So I'm very excited about that. I just got them in the other day. They look fantastic. In fact, you know, this doesn't have anything to do with book news, but if you are looking for some Star Trek fabrics, Joanne's Fabrics has an excellent selection right now. Really cool fabrics. So if you just can't get enough of Star Trek and you want to be sleeping on it all night, this is the way to go.
All right. And that, by the way, is not a paid promotion. That's simply Matthew letting you know that he wants to sleep with Star Trek. And if you want to enhance that with cross-stitch, you can do that if you pick up this book. And this is going to come out on May 28th. And I believe it's already available for pre-order at Amazon if you want to get your hands on it and have it sent to you as soon as it's available. All right. So, Matthew, what else do we have up in news? Very short news today.
Yeah, just a short thing, but I saw this and it's coming out on April 16th, and I thought that this would be something great because right after that, was it April 30th, the Next Generation Blu-ray Discs Season 3 are going to be coming out. So you're going to want this book, Star Trek Classic Quotes, The Next Generation. So this way you can be up on your Star Trek quotes from The Next Generation. You can be blowing everyone away on Twitter with coming up with the best random quotes from The Next Generation. This is going to be a lot of fun, I think. It's going to cover the entire series, commemorating the 25th anniversary of the first episode. So this is going to be a lot of fun.
What's your favorite quote from The Next Generation? Are there any that you remember that have just always stuck with you over the years?
I am not the merry man.
Of course, yeah. That's one of the most classics.
Worf, it doesn't get much better than him. Do you have a favorite, though, Chris?
As a single quote, kind of tough. Mine tend to be longer, and there's some discussions, especially in All Good Things, the discussion between Picard and Q at the end. So if you boil it down to just a quote, it would be "All good things must come to an end." But of course, that's not really a Star Trek quote.
I think another one of my favorites is it's from yesterday's Enterprise, I believe, with Picard saying, "Let's make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise." I think that's a really good quote. Kind of sums up the feeling of the series and how it encapsulated the idea that the Enterprise name is never going to be forgotten because there's always one around, you know, plenty of letters left in the alphabet.
I was just about to say that reminds me of one I love from First Contact when he tells Beverly that there are plenty of letters left in the alphabet.
You know, I'm kind of hoping this will cover the movies too, because I really like the quote in Generations as well when Picard is talking about time and how he says he rather thinks of time as a friend who goes along with us on the journey, reminding us that, you know, these moments will never come again. And I love that quote. And I think it's really a good quote for life, actually. Cherishing every moment we have, unless you're Riker and, you know, he's going to live forever. So
it definitely is. Although the flip side of that is the one that kind of rings true for me, which is Dr. Sorin when he tells Picard that time is the fire in which we burn. Because that's actually how I feel most of the time, as I try to keep up with everything that's going on. And I notice how quickly the time passes as you get older.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I just thought about this, but it makes me think of what David Mack had talked about at the very end of his newest series about what Picard believes about life and existence, and that there is something, there's a more spiritual plane to it than he had ever imagined. And he, I think throughout his tenure as captain of the Enterprise and throughout the movies and then throughout, you know, of course, the novel series, he's kind of grown to be a more spiritually minded person with all that he's been through. And I think, too, maybe just as he's aged. And that kind of shows up a little bit there in Generations, I think, with him talking about time as a friend, you know, instead of the flip side where that time is our enemy.
So it'll be a lot of fun to get this book and flip through and remember all those moments because, as illustrated by our discussion right here, you first asked me what are your favorite quotes, and because there are so many great moments, it's hard for me to pull one out immediately. But then as we talk, I'm remembering this one, I'm remembering that one. So a great memory refresher here. And so this one is coming out April 16th, and retail price $12.95. Amazon has it for $10.36. So like a lot of the books we've been talking about over the past few weeks, very inexpensive, kind of an impulse buy. You just, you know, see it in the store. I don't know if they'll have this at someplace like Target or not, but I'm sure, you know, like a Barnes & Noble probably will have it. So you see it on the shelf and just grab it.
And it is going to be nice. I mean, this is in hardcover as well. So this is not just a paperback book. So for $10.36, you know, if you're a Prime member, this is perfect.
Yeah, and 96 pages too, so it's not, you know, it's not like a super thin book. All right, very good. Well, why don't we jump over to comic news? And the first thing we have is the anticipated release on February 20th of Hive number 4, so we can find out what ultimately happens to King Poseidon himself, Jean-Luc Picard / Locutus of the future.
Yeah, this evening I went ahead and contacted Comixology and their support department to ask them if they knew when this would be coming out. They said to me that right now it's scheduled for the 20th. And so I say that just in case there's any delays, but hopefully this will be coming out the 20th. Like you said, I'm anticipating this will be in a very interesting comic. We'll probably have quite a long discussion, I would think, seeing what happens to King Locutus Poseidon and his trident. I'm really worried about the trident mostly, just because, you know, how can you go wrong holding a trident?
You're afraid he's going to poke you, right?
That's a little personal, Chris.
I'm waiting to see if the reset button that we have been predicting is going to take place at the end of Hive. Kind of expecting it. And, you know, I mean, if it does, I guess it's fine. We'll just look at Hive as this kind of interesting what-if scenario of the Federation's history over the course of, you know, many centuries. And yeah, it'll be fun to see.
Well, and I mean, as we've talked, you know, we talked to David Mack a few weeks ago, and it's hard to beat, I think, the direction that he went with in Destiny for giving us the final chapter of the Borg. And for me, that just kind of is what I think of when I think of canon for the end of the Borg and the beginning of the Borg. So very well fits into the whole saga of Star Trek. And so I'm hoping, and I've got my fingers crossed, that this end will be a worthy end to the Borg and it won't just be a huge reset button. Because, you know, when I think of the Borg as a villain, this is a great foe for the Federation. And they deserve, if you're going to send them out, even in a comic, to send them out well.
Well, hopefully it will come out on February 20th, as they are saying right now, and we will find out very shortly. Now, something we have been anticipating was finally released this week, and that is Ongoing number 17, which gives us the backstory of Dr. McCoy in the Abramsverse. Now, you and I have both read this, and the very first thing I said to you was, hey, they started it off with a lens flare coming out of the Enterprise. But
straight out of the deflector dish. Right. I'm still a little blind in one eye because of it. So I do want to warn everyone to be careful with this comic. You may lose, it may poke your eye out.
Right. Especially if like me, you're reading it on an iPad with a Retina display because it's extremely bright.
Yes. So very dangerous. Say.
Very dangerous stuff here. But what do you think about the story itself, Matthew?
Well, just for our listeners, spoilers, we will be talking about this comic. So if you have not read it, go ahead and stop right now. Go get it on Comixology or the Star Trek Comics app. Read it and then press play again. So now.
Right. And it's a short one. It's a 24-page comic instead of a 32-page.
Yeah, so it's not that long. You know, I liked that we finally get the backstory here for McCoy. And of course, you know, in a 24-page comic, you can't go into great detail because honestly, what they do is they cover a long span of time for him from all the way being a boy to graduated from college and then married, being a doctor, then getting into Starfleet after the divorce. So that is a huge span of time. But I did like getting these little snippets in his life and kind of seeing what makes McCoy kind of a melancholy character throughout the rest of his life.
Yeah, it is a lot of ground to cover. I think that there are a lot of seeds that were planted here that could be explored in some McCoy novels set in the Abramsverse, which it would be very interesting to find out more about his childhood, for example. Definitely to find out more about his marriage and as his career progressed and the things that led to the divorce. I mean, it's kind of alluded to here, and you know, if you've been in relationships or marriages, you can fill in the blanks of what's on this one page. But you know, basically it was all great in the beginning. Work kind of pulled them apart. They grew apart, and that was that. And it, you know, maybe left McCoy with some regrets about his work, but at the same time, I think he loved his work most of all in the end, and being able to help people. And that's kind of what I get through the rapid progression in this comic of his life.
Yes, and I what I thought was really interesting as well is that in this comic, and we know from the Prime universe that McCoy loses his father in a very tragic way, you know, allowing his father to die, being taken off life support, and then a few months later, them finding the cure for what his father had. That doesn't happen in this comic, and so I'm wondering if McCoy's father is still alive, because that does kind of change the character a little bit. You know, Bones is a little bit of a curmudgeon, but a lot of that in the Abramsverse seems to have to do with his personal issues of, you know, being divorced and having a failed marriage and feeling like he has nothing left on Earth, and not something like the tragic loss of a father, and then realizing that if you had just allowed him to suffer a little bit while longer, he could have been with you for years to come. And so the character here we see is quite a bit different, unless somewhere down the road they have McCoy lose his father.
Right. Now, is it clear? I'm trying to think back. Now, that whole scene is in Star Trek V when Cybok makes him relive events of the past. His father, on the timeline, died after he joined Starfleet or before he joined Starfleet? I cannot
that
recall.
That part
actually.
I don't know.
I just ask because I'm wondering if it was after he joined Starfleet, then it's still possible for that to play out in the alternate reality in the same way. Now, if it was before he joined Starfleet, that's already a big change in the timeline.
Exactly.
Another thing I really liked in here, though, was related to his father. One thing you get from McCoy in the original series is that he's a doctor who always makes do with what's available to him. You think about all these situations when they beam down to planets. One for me that always comes to mind is Miri, when they've beamed down to the planet where all the adults are dead, you know, and the children die when they reach a certain age. And he has to just use what's available to him there to find a cure for this. And it's actually a life and death situation for himself and for Kirk and the crew, because they have to find a way also to escape their captivity on this planet. And I often joke about his solution there, because it feels kind of like, let's just mix some stuff up, and he eyeballs it, and yeah, it looks about right. Here, why don't you drink this, and it'll make you better. But, that's kind of my impression of McCoy a lot of the time. You know, there are the scenes in this comic here where his father says that, you know, there's a medical lesson for you in this. When you don't have all the fancy technology available, you just make do with what you have. You know, and his father puts his arm in a sling made out of his Ole Miss t-shirt. And it was a nice little tidbit about those moments in life where your children are influenced by your actions, and how his father helped develop, you know, who Bones became.
And you can see the dedication that he has. You can see the bits of his father too, where, you know, the beginning of this comic, they're walking through the woods and he's telling, you know, Leonard, look, we're not out here to do anything that involves a pad or some sort of bright screen. We're out here to enjoy nature. And if we get lost and we have to eat, you know, wild raccoons, because we got lost, we're going to do it. You know, and that kind of homespun appreciation for the simpler things is something that you really do get from McCoy throughout all of TOS. And, you know, you get that kind of feeling from him, even though we haven't known him very long in the JJ-verse, you still get that feeling from him. And I think that I liked this comic because it was showing that his father's way of looking at life has had a big influence on his look of life, especially, too, right, when it comes to being a doctor.
And it was a strong influence that followed him all the way through. You know, he had the heartbreak of his marriage, and he kind of lost himself a little bit in that, felt like he needed a new beginning, which turned out to be Starfleet. And in the beginning, you know, he's talking to this little girl who's sick in the hospital, Jenny, and she says she's going to join Starfleet when she grows up. She's terminally ill. She's kind of dreaming. And he says she's braver than him. You know, he would never join Starfleet. That he's kind of maybe scared of the challenges or the adventure or the unknown of space or whatever. But in the end, you know, that becomes that fresh start for him.
Yeah, and I really liked just that last bit at the end of him talking about the fact that, you know, he went out into the universe to find himself, to get a new sense of purpose and a new home, and the fact that he had found his way. You know, he lost his way in Mississippi. He thought he would never leave there, and it took leaving there, the place he thought he'd never leave, to find himself again. And he found a new sense of being with the Enterprise. And I think mm-hmm. that's great. And I loved that it did tie back into Jenny's wish of being on a starship. And she wanted to be a starship captain, and she wanted her view screen to be able to wrap all the way around. She could always see the stars. And I like that it ends with McCoy just standing there thinking, it doesn't wrap all the way around, Jenny, but I know you'd still love it. And the heart of McCoy, I think, really comes through here. And this is what makes this guy such a deep person. You can tell that everything affects him from the inside out. And I think this is why I really resonate with his character.
Yeah, definitely. And I could associate with him, too. You know, I'm originally from Alabama, and I wandered very far astray here to Tokyo to make my life ultimately. And yeah, sometimes, you know, a change of view it's needed to help you grow and to help you find, you know, who you really are. So it's a very good one. I'm glad we got this story. I want more. You know, we were talking before we went on the air about what we thought about this comic, and one of my comments was that I would have liked to have known even more about it. But of course, you're limited to what you can do in 24 pages. If the Abrams verse is going to continue, now I think on the screen, I think it's only going to continue for one more film. So there will be three, and that's probably going to be it. If it continues, though, to have its own life in literature, I would love to see them do a series of books that really focus on McCoy and his journey as a doctor, because I would like to fill in more of the blank. This comic, I think, raised more questions for me than it answered in a way. It sort of teased you with the background of Bones, but then made you want to know a lot more detail about his life.
And I think that's one of the signs of a good comic or a good book is a lot of times they leave you wanting more, especially if they're a continuing character. And I'm really glad that the storylines in most of the ongoing comics do leave me wanting to know more. That speaks to the writing. This is definitely a story, like you said, I too really want to know more about Dr. McCoy. I want to know more about all of the characters, to get into their backgrounds and what's, you know, brought them to this point, because, you know, the first movie didn't really get to deal with that too much. You know, we really only get to see the background of Kirk and Spock in any kind of detail.
Keenzer. Don't forget Keenzer.
Well, that's true. I mean, Keenzer. How could I forget the linchpin of the JJ-verse? yes, definitely, if you're listening, IDW, please give us more.
more McCoy. Well, Matthew, we just talked about the Abrams verse McCoy in News, and now we're going to go back to the Prime Universe, as it's come to be known, or for some of us, the real Star Trek, and we're going to talk about Dr. McCoy for the feature today in comic form. And we've got some John Byrne here to talk about.
I had never read these before, Chris, and read them twice today now to get ready. And I have to tell you, John Byrne, give me more McCoy, because this was fantastic.
Right? Yeah, this left me just wanting more and more of this. Now, for those of you who haven't read these, another spoiler warning, we're going to go into detail about this series. Now, this is a series from 2010, and this is the Leonard McCoy Frontier Doctor series from IDW. It's four comics, and it's all about Dr. McCoy, the bearded Dr. McCoy, and his adventures after the original five-year mission and before the motion picture, because the Enterprise is undergoing its refit during the events of these comics.
And I thought that this was a great place to really get into the character. You know, Bones shows up in the motion picture. He's got this amazing beard that Bear Grylls would, you know, just kill to have. He's got the medallion of awesome. And, you know, you want to know more about what this guy has been up to. And the way that John Byrne gets into this character, from the moment he comes on, you're like, yep, that's Dr. McCoy. And the storyline is just fantastic. This idea of kind of this Federation doctor service, where they just basically go around in a ship and try and help people, you know, Doctors
right, yeah.
Without Borders.
Right.
This is fantastic.
Yeah, Galactic Doctors Without Borders.
Which is really, really far. I mean, it's kind of vague when you think about how far you could go to help people.
Right. You could go anywhere. Yeah, this is the Federation's or Starfleet's Frontier Medics program that he joins. And Kirk has been urging him to do something with his time. And in true McCoy fashion, at least this is how I always feel about Dr. McCoy, he sends letters to Admiral Kirk, but he writes them by hand, kind of like, Matthew, the way that you take notes when you're preparing for the shows, because you like to post photos of your notebook and your pencil. McCoy is doing this in the 23rd century, writing down, basically Admiral Kirk is Dr. McCoy's pen pal at this point in time.
And I really liked that because it fits so well with what we know of McCoy. You know, he just likes to be able to do things in a way that make him feel connected to what he's doing. And so instead of kind of dictating a letter, you know, audibly through the computer and sending some kind of log like that, you know, I think that what McCoy really enjoys and relishes is being alive. And for him, that means doing things the old-fashioned way, having a good drink with a friend, writing a letter. All of this, I think, makes him feel connected to just who he is. And I love that. It just says so much about the character without having to explain it to you. You know, the guy's writing a letter in the 23rd century. That says volumes.
And having it delivered by courier.
Exactly. I'm just glad he wasn't trying to use carrier pigeons. It's space carrier pigeons.
You put like little tiny helmets on the carrier pigeons so they can fly through space.
Little oxygen masks.
That'd be awesome. But yeah, you know, Byrne, he does such a good job here of capturing McCoy's voice. It really, you feel like this is Dr. McCoy throughout, as he's writing these letters to Admiral Kirk to tell him about his adventures in the Frontier Medics program.
Well, and what I really liked, I thought was really interesting too, is this kind of juxtaposition at the beginning. You know, we don't really picture Kirk sitting behind a desk. You know, Bones does that in the original series when he's sitting behind his desk working on his medical stuff. But at this point, you know, Kirk is behind the desk as the admiral, and now Bones is the captain of a ship going off in the galaxy, exploring strange new, you know, exploring strange new diseases and boldly going where no doctor's gone before. So I thought that this was really interesting.
It's kind of like in the ongoing 17 that we just talked about earlier in news, near the end of that, he says as he travels, he finds, you know, all new ways to get sick.
Exactly,
that's
yes.
That's what he's finding in the galaxy, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought it was really interesting, too, because what we talked about with ongoing fits so perfectly with this older McCoy. It was really seamless, honestly. And so to have this kind of all McCoy all day for me was really nice. That ongoing actually really helped me reading these comics because I felt like I was reading an extension of the exact same character.
Well, let's jump into the actual stories themselves. Now, the first story is called Weeds, and I was a little bit surprised not to see Mary Louise Parker in this comic because I just maybe had it confused with another show. I thought Dr. McCoy was dealing drugs and, you know.
I thought there were going to be some more pot dealers in the episode or this issue. I thought there might be a few more sex scenes. I just didn't know where this was going when I saw Weeds. I mean, the first thing is Kirk getting a letter from a courier. I didn't know where that was going to go.
You didn't know what was in the envelope, right?
Exactly.
You thought maybe.
Yeah. Maybe, you know, Kirk was getting some Pineapple Express delivered to him from Dr. McCoy, the good stuff. So who knew what was going to go on? But yeah, this was a great beginning. I think it really just set up well the time period that we're in, you know, before the motion picture and right after the 5-year mission. So, you know, some things have changed, not everything. But specifically uniforms have changed. That helped as well.
Yeah, so it establishes where we are. Now, talking about the stories, what I really love about this particular comic series is that it's very, very true to Star Trek. It's the ideas. It's a pro and a con in a way. It's a pro in that these four comics tell very good stories and they talk about big ideas, and they actually stop and make you think about these ideas. Now, the con to it is that I feel like the ideas are too big for comics. And as I'm reading them, I'm thinking the whole time, like, wow, this would have made a fantastic episode, or this would be a brilliant novel where they could really explore this issue more.
I think that this is the benefit of having this comic series and John Byrne as the writer, because he's not pandering to the comic audience. He's making this just like a Star Trek episode, just like a Star Trek novel. He's introducing, like you said, all of these things that we've come to expect from Star Trek without watering it down for us. And he does leave us wanting more, just as we talked about with ongoing 17. And so I really enjoyed that because I am thinking through some of these issues still. Even though I've read these twice now, I'm still thinking about some of these ideas. And that makes for such a great experience that a comic is leaving me thinking about some kind of philosophical issue by the end. That's good writing.
Oh, it really is. And in the first issue, Weeds, again, it's not about drugs. It's actually about a planet called Ophiuchus 3, on which there is a colony of humans, and this entire planet is covered with vegetation. And there's both an environmental message here, as well as, you know, one of the missions of the Enterprise in the original series and Starfleet is to seek out new life. And what we end up with here is the discovery of a new form of life. But you also get the disregard on the part of humans towards life that they don't understand. They are believing that this is just vegetation and they're treating it as such, yet they're being puzzled by the reactions of the jungle on the planet. They're being puzzled by this disease, which is starting to kill all the humans, which is, of course, the reason that McCoy is there, because he and his sidekick Duncan and the stowaway Andorian Thela receive an emergency signal from this planet, and they say they're required by Federation law to respond to that signal before they do anything else. And so this story also puts Bones to the test as a doctor, possibly more so than the next three comics do.
It does. You know, not only does he have to defend this plant life, which he doesn't necessarily understand yet, but he gets a sense from, and you know, you can tell that this is somebody who's been on the Enterprise for 5 years and has seen the strangest things and has a sense when something's probably intelligent. But really coming down to having to use every ounce of his medical knowledge to fight this infection that's happening to the people. And he even himself becomes infected. And so I thought that this was an excellent use in showing off just how much Bones has learned from being on the final frontier for 5 years. And I gotta say, I was not expecting this, but you know, three pages in, we get an Andorian fight scene.
I know. Was it that awesome?
Awesome. I mean, not only a Andorian fight scene, but a hot Andorian fight scene. I mean, this, you know, she ain't no slouch, this Thela.
Well,
she's a looker.
She is definitely not Jeffrey Combs.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's everywhere, but she, I wouldn't mind some time with Thela.
Well, you might have to fight Duncan for her as we
That's true. Find out later That's on. True. And I wouldn't want to take away the love of his life.
But I loved it when I turned the page and I was like, oh, yes, Andorian fight scene. Thank you, John Byrne.
Yeah, it was perfect. I knew we were going to have a good talk about Andorians here. And I thought it was great, too, that the way that John Byrne writes in different Star Trek aliens that we may have seen before, like Andorians here, and just gives us a tiny bit of background about them because we don't know much about them from the original series. And so I really enjoyed getting this kind of piece of seeing something like an Andorian that I always wish we'd seen more of in the original series.
Yeah, I do feel like the take on the Andorians here is very much influenced by Enterprise.
And that is true. I mean, and honestly, we know more about Andorians from Enterprise than we ever did from, you know, the background characters that they really are in the original series. So what, Chris, did you think about this kind of mission that McCoy is on? You know, it's kind of this old ship. It feels a little bit like the Millennium Falcon they're on, except it's really sophisticated inside with all the equipment, and then just kind of hopping from issue to issue. What did you think about that as a setup?
Yeah, that's a good analogy, although Duncan has a lot less hair than Chewbacca.
That's true.
I thought it was interesting that the ship's name is Joanna, and to be honest, when I read Joanna, the first thing I thought about was that you named your iPhone Natalie, and I was wondering, what is it with giving ships and phones these female names?
Yeah, there's just something about having a, you know, connection with your technology that you want to name it. You know, all of my technology has a name. My iPad is Hedwig. My iPod is the Fortress of Solitude. So yeah, there's just something about it. I don't know. I'm kind of weird. But you know, though, McCoy's daughter's name is Joanna. So I'm wondering if that's a sly reference to his daughter, whose name is Joanna.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure that's absolutely it. As for the mission, I think it's an interesting concept, you know, to have Federation doctors who go out and are kind of on call. It's basically like a doctor on call, but you're on a ship in space somewhere, and then as you pick up an emergency signal or as Starfleet dispatches you to a certain planet, you go and you kind of clean up whatever mess is going on there. And it's something that I guess we've never really seen that in Star Trek. The only thing I can think of might be in All Good Things in the future time frame when Beverly is captain of the Pasteur, we don't really know what the mission of the Pasteur is. So it's interesting to think of maybe that was part of this program where the Federation has medical ships around that are available to help both Federation planets as well as others who are in need.
Yeah, it reminded me of in World War II when you had the large liners that were turned into huge medical ships to be able to supply the troops and be large floating hospitals, basically. And it would make sense that Starfleet would have something like this, that Starfleet Medical would have their own ships that would go into disaster areas to be able to help out in a way that, you know, a normal starship couldn't. Because, I mean, we've all seen the sick bays in Starfleet ships. They're not really that big. So if you have a whole planet that's, you know, dealing with stuff, you don't have to turn a cargo bay into a sick bay every time. You know, this way you just call for, you know, your local friendly ambulance Starfleet ship and they'll come and help you out.
And I'm sure that there are plenty of those in Starfleet. The stories that we have seen on screen just haven't lended themselves to, you know, taking us aboard those vessels very much or showing us very much of it. I'm sure it's there. It gives me an idea for a future Star Trek series. It could be like a medical drama, and the ship at the center of the series is a medical ship, and it's all about the doctors. And now it's not like Garrett Wong's kind of Scrubs in Space comedy thing, not like that. I'm talking about like a serious show about the medical aspects of the Federation and you know what it's like, what real life is like in a galaxy that is ultimately very hostile to life.
What I really liked about this comic too is that it did remind me a lot of just Phlox and the way that he's a doctor, and Bones is really in that vein of just being somebody who can be anywhere, take any medical issue and find a cure for it by using any means necessary. Just really that kind of doctor. And I really liked that about this series. It really does feel like he's on the frontier. I mean, it's called Frontier Doctor. So I liked that they gave it that feel as well and allowed him to really be out on the edge of the final frontier and finding out some of the strangest things I've ever seen, like an entire planet whose plant life is one big ecosystem, which really just steals from Avatar, which has already come out at this point when this comic came out. But this was actually a little bit more interesting because there aren't any other animals on the planet. There's just this hive-like mind for plant life. I hope that was really interesting.
Yeah, that manifests itself in a way that appear like McCoy is looking at these people like, wait a minute, you don't see these guys walking around, these guys flying around? It's never crossed your mind that there might actually be some intelligence behind this? That's kind of the view he has of them here, I think. And same for me as the reader as I'm reading it. But it was an interesting concept, and of course it ultimately ends up with McCoy saving the day through his ingenuity and the Federation, you know, taking note of a new life form. It was a very good story, and this one I felt was handled very well within the format of the comic. Issue number one did not leave me so much wanting to, say, have a novel version of this where they could explore it more. I felt like Byrne did a good job here of encapsulating everything within the 32 pages that we have.
And I really like the way the artwork works in all four of these comics. There's some great angles to each, some of the pages, some great uses of the page and all of it, and the way that it kind of presents the information to you. They're packed as much as they can, I feel like, on the page. And made it really
packed,
visually
yeah.
interesting. And so yeah. I really like this because it's very detailed.
Yeah, it is quite packed. It is very detailed and gives you a very thorough story, no doubt. Why don't we jump over to issue number 2 now, which is called Error. And this one opens up with Bones telling Thela all about the Mirror Universe, even though the story itself doesn't actually take place in the Mirror Universe.
Which I thought was fun. You know, it just gives you the reminder of who McCoy is and what he's done in his life, and that, you know, not everybody in the Federation or around the galaxy has an idea about this kind of thing. And, it, you know, when you tell somebody this kind of story, it still kind of blows their mind. I think this idea, wait, there's another universe and there's another me out there. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, and it was a nice little nod to the original series, you know, kind of throwing that in. And then they take us to a kind of the opposite of the planet we were just on. So instead of a planet being covered entirely by vegetation, they take us to a planet covered entirely by water, except for 5 small islands that all together total about the size of Manhattan. But there's a big mystery here for McCoy to solve, and this is one of the stories here in these comics that really left me wanting more and thinking that this would make a really, really fantastic television episode.
It would. Although I noted on this issue that it really showcases what you can do with comics or say an animated series by being able to create these ginormous sets.
That's true.
The way that each of these islands is set up is that they have to build vertically because there's no space. And so it would be very compact. And I mean, you would have to be, you know, all green screen. And so this really just showcased the beauty of the creative mind being able to put anything it can on paper because you're not constrained by budgets and, you know, all of that kind of stuff that goes into making a television show.
Yeah. That's a very good point. The story itself, the idea behind the story, is one that I was picturing it unfolding as an episode in my head, though, because there's a great mystery here. There are these nice little tidbits here, like this headband that they have to wear to transport. And you're thinking, well, that's really weird. Why would you need to wear a headband to transport? But then when you get to the end of the story, it's all explained. I thought it was a very clever little thing that they snuck in there and brought us back to it at the end. Now, we also meet Scotty in here, which I thought was a little bit unusual that he would be on this planet when he was so involved in the refit of the Enterprise, which he does talk about a little bit here. Did meeting Scotty do anything for you in this story, or did it just seem like something to throw in there as, hey, here's a familiar character?
Well, what it did for me was just showcase that there is life for some with these characters outside of the refit of the Enterprise. You know, and for Scotty, you know, he talks about how he's been working nonstop basically on this for months and months and months, and that the Admiral has forced him to take
18 months, in fact.
Yes. Yeah. So he's been forced to take some R&R. Which any good commander should do for their crew. And so I was really just surprised to see Scotty show up. And it was just fun to see him in this issue, even though he doesn't really do a lot in it.
Yeah, he's not really integral to the story itself. I'll tell you a few points that in the story that kind of connected with me. One of them is because I live in Japan. The whole concept here of the Tarsians, and they're really sticklers for the rules, and they're really sticklers for protocol. And they explain that when you have so many people in such a small space, you really have to follow the rules. And, you know, the society here is a lot like that. There's a great contrast for me being American, growing up in America, but then living most of my adult life in Japan, between what I see as sort of a society of anarchy in the U.S. Anarchy is a strong word, but it's kind of chaotic. It's very much like everyone do what they want to do all the time environment, especially compared to Japan, where here everything's very orderly. You know, you don't act out in public. You don't make a big deal out of things publicly. The, you know, transportation network, everything's very orderly. It's like everyone is very much following the rules all the time. And it really helps to keep everything flowing, and it helps to keep the society running smoothly. And that's just something that popped in my head as I was reading this comic and as the Tarsians were talking about theirs. Whereas when McCoy got there, he was like, to hell with the rules. You know, I got to save this man. And you see kind of the outside Starfleet personnel or humans coming into a situation like that that's very different and kind of wanting to dismiss it right off the bat without really thinking about why things are working the way they are.
And it made me wonder, I mean, I know that they talk about the fact that they do this because they have so many people living in such a small, confined area. But this is the point where I felt like the story didn't really explain why they do this. I mean, you know, we come to the end of the story and they live forever, or at least thousands of years, and I'm not really sure what the point of them having to go through all these rituals. Is it just because they have all this time on their hands and they're bored, so they start thinking up rules? That was the part where that didn't fit as well.
I think
you know what really interested me was the, you know, the mystery.
Yeah, I think you're right, and that's why I say this would make a great episode, or possibly even better, a novel. Because they do throw out, and it's why I said at the beginning that I feel like the ideas in these comics are too big for comics. They throw all these little interesting elements out at you, but they're not able to actually explore them or explain them within 32 pages.
This does seem like it would be a very good TOS novel for the Enterprise to run across, say, maybe right after the motion picture. To kind of be visiting this planet and get to meet these aliens and, you know, them all struggling with trying to figure out what exactly is going on here. Because, yes, this is what I like so much about this is that, again, it fits perfectly within this time frame. It just feels from the moment you crack open the cover of any one of these issues, okay, I'm in that time period. I'm right there, right before the motion picture. This, all the characters fit, all the situations fit. It's Star Trek at its core. So again, I mean, I feel bad because, you know, don't have a lot to say bad about it except for, you know, just some of the things I didn't feel like worked as well in this one. But in the end, I think again, John Byrne just really nails what it means to write a Star Trek story.
Yeah, he does. And the mystery that you talked about, as we go through the comic, we find that, you know, they talk about how these Tarsians all seem to be the same age and they all seem to look the same. And why is that and what's going on? And it's, there's this big debate in Star Trek for a long time about transporters and how do the transporters really work and what happens when you're transported? You know, does the transporter kill you and then resurrect you? Does it kill you and create a new person who somehow has your memories but isn't really you anymore? You know, or does it actually store you and somehow transfer some intangible soul to some other place? And they kind of take that on in here a little bit. And the resolution that the way the Tarsian transporters work, and the reason why, even though they are about to join the Federation and get Federation technology, they don't want their transporter technology to be replaced by Federation technology, is that, you know, the transporters are the thing that's keeping them alive. But it's basically making a copy of them from the first time they use it. And then when they use it, they're just being reborn the way they were that first time. So it's almost like a way of a path to immortality.
It is.
But not a good one, I would say.
Well, yeah. What I like about this is the way that McCoy explains it, about saying that, you know, when the transporter transports you, it breaks a man down to the most basic parts, puts him back together somehow, and the life force also safely makes the trip. You know, basically McCoy is saying, look, your soul gets transported with you. We don't know how, it just does. But what the Tarsians are doing is they are basically, they've destroyed that soul of a person a long time ago because they've just made a copy and then transported the brainwave patterns into that newly remade model. You're not the same. And
right.
So basically the question becomes in this issue, do you trade your soul for immortality?
Exactly. That's what I was about to say.
And that is, oh my gosh, what a question to ask.
Right, because basically that's what they're doing. They're trading what makes them unique for immortality. Although ultimately, even that's killing them because, again, McCoy is a frontier doctor here, and one thing that's going on is that Tarsians are starting to die, and they don't know why it's happening. And it's ultimately explained that every time they use the transporters, these unliving molecules, unliving cells are building up in them to the point where it overtakes their body and it kills them. But ultimately, the Tarsians say, okay, well, great. We understand that's what's happening. That's all fine. But, you know, this is how we do things, and we're going to keep doing it.
Well, and it reminded me of the idea that, you know, a lot of times people will be faced with things like, okay, just take smoking or drinking or doing drugs, anything that can kill you. And they're faced with the realization that, look, if I don't stop this, it's going to kill me. But I'm going to do it anyway. That's pretty much their attitude. We don't care. We'll live sort of forever and then we'll die. But I'm also going to give up my soul to do it too. So apparently that's the deal they're willing to make with their devil.
Yeah, well, it highlights the way different people see the world in different ways. And, you know, different things are important to different people. So it's just a really good message. It's why I say it's very Star Trek. You know, it raises this question. It's here that we can sit here and have this kind of deep philosophical discussion about a comic. And that shows me that these comics are very true to Star Trek. Let's go to issue number 3. This one's called Medics. And this one I didn't like quite as much. I mean, I think the story's interesting. I didn't like it quite as much as a Frontier Doctor comic because I felt like they took McCoy out of having to solve a medical problem. And they just kind of put him into the middle of a bigger ethical story.
Yeah, this one, there is definitely less medicine to it and more kind of, it's kind of like a rip-roaring adventure for him.
Yeah.
And of course, the big surprise too is that Gary Seven shows up in a very interesting way.
I thought you were
going to
say
way.
The big surprise was that Thela and Duncan were getting frisky.
Well, yeah, that happens too, and good going, Duncan, because, wow.
Matthew is jealous of you, Duncan.
I thought it was interesting, too, in this comic. This is the first time she's actually worn normal clothes. You know, before she's always kind of been in this very risque, almost like leather-looking, like, dress, and you know, finally she's put on some normal clothes. But I thought that what was interesting about this story was the idea of these people, these clones, they've been transported from the past, which is our past. Gary Seven is from the 60s, and these clones have been transported from there by his Beta 5 computer to an outlying system that's away from any shipping lanes because they were created by these madmen.
We should say they were created by the American military, or at least by these two men, for the American military in a secret program to create an army of clones, which, again, reminded me of Star Wars and the Clone Wars.
Exactly. So these clones resume what they've been trained to do, which is fight each other on this planet. Well, the Klingons come across this planet and think, well, this is great. We can have basically an arena like the Hunger Games, and we can just watch these people kill each other,
And we don't have to do it, but we can place bets on them. This becomes like their Hunger Games arena, which I thought was really interesting. And then, of course, the Klingons don't really enjoy it being so primitive with these bows and arrows. They give them all these fancy weapons. They also introduce women so that they can have babies and make sure that right. they can keep coming to this planet.
Now, from an ethical perspective here, now they don't simply introduce women. You know, they don't send Klingon women there to mate with the human clones. They actually use genetic engineering to create women, human women, and then they introduce them so that these human clones can start reproducing so that they will have an endless supply of warriors to take part in these war games that they're betting on.
Which is just so interesting as an ethical dilemma. One, I mean, creating all these clones. Two, then creating more clones that are females out of the male clones, and then I'm having children, and I have no idea what that does to the DNA strand. So that made me think of the medical issues that McCoy or any doctor might face when dealing with all of these people.
Right.
But yes, this is much more a story about this ethical issue and not so much anything medical.
Right. Yeah. Unfortunately, now I think the ethical debate is very interesting. And again, this is something that I would enjoy seeing played out in a novel where you could really, really dig into that issue. I was a little disappointed in this one that they didn't allow McCoy to take on that medical angle a little bit more, just because with it being Dr. McCoy as the frontier doctor, I wanted to see him doing his McCoy things and solving the medical mystery. And we didn't quite get that one in here. And this turns out to be a cliffhanger of all things.
It does. I thought it was interesting that at the end of this episode, you get the Yorktown showing up. You get Pike's original number one showing up as an admiral, which was yep. very cool. And then, of course, the cliffhanger is who is in her sick bay on the Yorktown. And so a really well-done comic. You know, like you, this isn't my favorite of the series, but it is a really fun adventure. And I thought it was a... It's definitely a risk for them to do something like Gary Seven in this comic. And I think it works for the story. It might just not be the best Frontier Doctor story.
Yeah, yeah, it was a good twist. And it's nice when they can take some element from the original series and they can hook it in like this. And, you know, maybe this was episode two of the series Assignment Earth that, you know, Roddenberry was trying to backdoor pilot in that Star Trek episode, and that they could have a crossover. You have a cameo by DeForest Kelly as Dr. McCoy in that. It could have worked that way. But I felt that the cliffhanger was a little bit odd, because what we end up with in issue four, which starts off being titled Hosts, is the continuation of that story, but it's only for half the issue. So I almost feel like I wish they had just done not even a double length comic, but just done, you know, like a 44 page comic and finished that story off in number three. So that then what we got in the second part of number four called Scalpel could have been explored a little more deeply, because it had a very interesting issue yes. to it. But before we talk about Scalpel, let's talk about Hosts just a little bit. And, you know, this picks up after the, it's a lot like Where No Man Has Gone Before and the Gary Mitchell Daner story.
It is. And it also, I feel like, references some of the ideas that we saw in the first comic, Weeds. Again, no drugs were involved. But the fact that they're on a planet that has had DNA and then intelligence evolve before any kind of like species, which I don't know if that's possible. I mean,
I don't
it's
know.
A great science fiction idea.
Yeah.
And so,
you know, I was thinking about that as I was reading it, and, you know, a good friend of mine is Athena Andreadis, who wrote the biology of Star Trek. And I was thinking that I need to get Athena to come on and just discuss from a scientific perspective if that's even possible, because I would be curious to find out what she says. Because for me, as a layman, it just seems like a far-fetched science fiction concept. I don't really know how that would work. But it makes for an interesting story, I guess.
Yeah. And this was one of those where it was definitely an interesting medical thing that Bones is having to try to figure out. You know, the idea that the intelligence has spread then to all of the different species that have evolved on this planet. And so none of the species are themselves exceptionally intelligent. It's them being linked to the entire hive mind. So almost kind of a Borgish type thing, but organically.
Sort of.
And
yeah.
So
it's
very
sort of
interesting
like,
idea.
It's sort of like all the life forms are manifestations of this intelligence in different shapes.
Right. And kind of... kind of that pantheistic way of viewing God, that we are all part of God, and so that each of us together make up God.
Right.
That in each of these, you know, beings on this planet, whether they be birds or whatever, all make up the intelligence of that planet.
Right. And if you want to take that in another way, a non-theological way, there is this recent idea called the biocosm, which is this idea that the universe itself is a life form, and that we are manifestations within the universe, and that actually our existence is part of the process of the universe living out its life and reproducing. There was a book written on that topic, and it's also an angle that Stephen Baxter takes in his Manifold series of books, which is a really excellent series. So in both ways, yeah, that is an idea that is out there and is kind of what's going on here in this issue.
So very interesting. What I also thought was interesting is that you have Christine Chapel and you have Number One, who are played by the same person.
Same character. Yeah.
So they look very similar in the drawings here. And I thought that was pretty funny to have both of them be in the same ship on the same crew.
Yeah.
And they're
the
same person.
Number One
really.
Here has the long gray hair. So this story overall, the concept of the intelligence was interesting to me. The actual action, you know, amongst the characters was, it didn't particularly grab me that much just because it felt a lot like a rehash of Where No Man Has Gone Before. But it was nice to see Dr. McCoy figure out what was happening with the DNA. And then, of course, somehow, and this they didn't go into this in the comic, but somehow they were able to communicate with this intelligence and get the intelligence to agree to, you know, stop screwing around with the crew and we'll take you home and drop you off, buy you dinner, and we'll go on our way. So that's kind of how it wraps up.
Yeah, I liked that. I thought it was, again, it's not as strong as the first one, but I still really enjoyed it.
So now let's go to Number Four, the second half of Number Four, Scalpel, which I was very disappointed that this ended up only being about 12 pages, because this was a really interesting concept about the ethical quandaries of manipulating time and changing the past and doing it with good intentions and maybe not understanding how one small change affects the broader world and the broader universe.
And I thought it was really interesting because this idea of, you know, taking time travel to manipulate very small things. And in the end, doesn't he make a great society? I mean, the question at the end for me was, does McCoy make the right choice? Because yes, you may have sacrificed some, but you saved a lot of people, because this is a very utopian society in a way that even the Federation, I don't think, could ever hope to be. I mean, this is, one might argue, the perfect society in the way that it deals with each other. I mean, it's very peaceful, loving, joyful. Everybody is just excited and happy, it seems like. There doesn't seem to be any problems with this society. So what did you think, Chris?
Well, we should give a little bit of background here. So what happens is Bones goes to this planet called Palvarlian 4. He meets his niece, Sophie, there. And then I assume it's his brother-in-law, Alex, because he mentions at one point, "Don't you remember what happened to my father?" So I think it was his brother-in-law rather than his brother. And his brother has this disease, but the ultimate bit of the story is that we find out that Sophie actually died 9 years earlier when they first arrived on the planet. And Alex uncovered this ancient technology, which had been around for about 10,000 years. And whoever created this technology had developed a way that you could see into the past and you could actually influence the thoughts of the people you were watching. Now that's a really interesting concept to me. And this one especially, I think, would have made a great novel just to explore that concept as the basis of a story. But anyway, Alex finds the person who killed Sophie, his daughter, and caused the mother and father of that person to never meet, so that that person was never born. And so suddenly Sophie reappeared because history had been changed. And that kind of emboldened him to make more and more changes. And so then he started putting the thoughts and ideas that people had learned and developed over thousands of years. He started putting those into the minds of ancient philosophers and scientists to influence the evolution of this society. And so that brings us to what you're saying, Matthew, of he created a paradise here. And then ultimately, is that good or bad or right or wrong? And as he's dying, he wants McCoy to take over the task. Now, two things here. At the end of this, Matthew, did you take it as McCoy went back and undid all the changes to this society, or he just went back and he undid his own personal experience so that he didn't have to deal with the question of whether he should honor his brother-in-law's request or not?
I got the feeling from the end of the comic, the fact that Kirk hasn't heard from Bones in about a month.
Right.
That he had changed the future or the past on this planet. And the reason Kirk hadn't heard from Bones is because he didn't have anything to write about. And Kirk even kind of says, well, nothing interesting must have happened. Well, right. If nothing interesting must have happened, then Bones even hypothesizes he wonders if he'll remember any of this if he changes. So, the history. So, my guess is that he did, which also means that he sacrificed Sophie, which is sad. You know, this is one of the things that I was left with is that Bones is not only changing or sacrificing her, who she is now, but he's sacrificing everybody else on this planet and who they are now. And I'm not quite sure if that's the right decision, you know, to take all of these lives just so those other lives can come back and exist. I don't know.
I didn't quite take it this way. I took it, in reading it, I think I took it simply as that he used the technology to erase his own involvement in this, not actually erasing the history. Now, if we take the way you're describing it with Sophie, maybe that's true. And that's an interesting thing about the comic here is it leaves us wondering and we can debate it. If he did go back and change that, it would have been 9 years earlier, then Sophie wouldn't have existed. But depending on what he did with Alex, all the changes that Alex made to the past could have still been made, unless he went back further and he just erased Alex's arrival on the planet, in which case Alex could never make those changes in the first place. Yeah, it's really hard, and your mind starts spinning as you think about it.
Yes, this whole ending I've had to keep thinking about and trying to figure out. And it's a bit ambiguous, and I think that's the point, is to read into it what you might want to. But it was just very interesting too, because, you know, Alex says to him, do the right thing. And then McCoy says, I wonder if it would have made any difference to my decision if Alex hadn't said that, if he hadn't used just those words. So this idea of what is the right thing, and I guess we're left wondering at the end, what does McCoy think is the right thing to do?
Yeah, yeah. The whole concept in general is a wonderful science fiction concept, and it did leave me wanting more. I think that this second part of issue number 4 left me wanting more than any of the other parts of Frontier Doctor. What was your favorite story within this 4 comic series?
You know, I think it is a tie between this last one, Scapel, and the first comic, Weeds. I really like the way that it deals with both of the issues that it brings up. I like the way that it's not hitting you over the head, making you think a certain way. It's just kind of presenting the issue like all of Star Trek does, and asking you to come to your own conclusions. And then what it does as well is it kind of leaves you looking towards, okay, what can I learn from this about where I live today? And of course, again, that's what Star Trek does the best. And I just like the way that these two comics, I think, really challenge McCoy personally, especially this last one, Scapel. I mean, this puts McCoy and his morality to the test, and to the core of who he is. And McCoy is not anything if but a very morally centered person, especially when you watch the original series. McCoy is kind of the moral heart of this show. And so to have him face this quandary, I think, was fascinating. Chris, what was your favorite?
I'll put it in two different terms. As far as a comic goes, I think that my favorite one was the first issue, Weeds, because I felt like it did the best job of telling a complete story that was very true to Bones and doing it within the framework of that comic. And so if you simply want to read a comic that has a deep message and really feels like a story about Dr. McCoy that has been lost, you know, in time, Star Trek, I think issue number 1, Weeds, is my favorite. As far as the concepts and the big ideas that John Byrne has put into these comics very impressively, I think that number 2, Error, and number 4, the second half, Scalpel, are my two favorites. I would love to explore those two issues more. I'd like to explore the whole religious aspect of the Tarsians and, you know, why they have this holy day, which happens to be named after the ship that they were all aboard when they crashed on the planet. Explore more about how this transporter technology affects their overall society, their interactions and such. And then in Scalpel, I would really love to explore the idea, the broader ideas that I think Alex was getting at, which was that he wanted Dr. McCoy to use that technology to influence, to go into the past and change things and influence the development, not only of Palvarlian 4, but of the broader galaxy and the Federation. He wanted him to affect the development of other worlds. That's what I took from it. And so from an idea standpoint, 2 and 4.
Well, and what this has made, and I think John Byrne will be very happy to hear me say this, but this really has cemented the fact that I'm going to be buying that collection of comics that is coming out, because, you know, this is fantastic work. To me, this is what makes Star Trek and Star Trek comics worth reading. This is the best representation I think I've seen of pure Star Trek at the heart. And what a wonderful representation of Dr. McCoy as well. proof positive of just really why I love this character. The fact that you could take him away from the Enterprise and have him work so well by himself. Yes, this is the kind of thing I hope that Star Trek comics will continue to do in the future, because this is as close to perfect as I've seen when it comes to Star Trek comics.
And it really left me wishing that this series were longer than four comics. You know, I think when I first saw this series, just looking at the covers, I think it's a little bit misleading. You know, you see Leonard McCoy, Frontier Doctor, and the covers kind of have this action feel to them a little bit. I think that the covers can lead you to think that the stories might be a little simpler and a little more shallow, whereas what's actually inside the books is really, like you said, very true to Star Trek. It's really deep writing. It's excellent and great storytelling, and it makes you think. So if you've listened to this all the way through and you don't have these comics and you didn't heed the spoiler warning at the beginning, still, we didn't give away... There's so much packed into here. There's so much that you can still read. You know, pick these up. I believe these are going to be bundled up in that John Byrne collection that's coming out, but they're also available right now from Comixology, IDW, Star Trek Comics app in digital form as four standalones and possibly as an omnibus as well. Pick them up. I mean, seriously, some great comic reading. All right, Matthew, well, it has really been fun exploring Dr. McCoy and comics with you today, and I'm glad to see that we can dig deeply into comics just as we do novels and really have some of these great discussions that you and I have.
Definitely, Chris. I've been really enjoying getting into Star Trek comics this way. With writing like this, it just makes me want to read them more. Hoping that, you know, don't get let down, because the bar has been set so high now. And so again, I will definitely be picking up John Byrne's collection that's coming out, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk about some of those more in the future. But I really do, like you said, if you don't have these, please go out and get them. You will not be sorry. This is great stuff.
Well, let's tell everyone how to contact us if they want to share their thoughts on Dr. McCoy, Frontier Doctor, or anything else we talked about in the news. Maybe send us some of their cross-stitch patterns. Let's tell them to go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. You can send a message to Literary Treks. That'll come to Matthew and me. You can actually now go over to trek.fm/forums. where we have new forums that we just launched this week. And there's a Literary Treks section there where you can also come and talk to us about the shows and the ideas that we discussed. You can go to Facebook and find us at facebook.com/trekfm. And of course, on Twitter under username trekfm. Now, Matthew, what if people want to look you up personally?
You can find me on trekfm doing the book reviews, as well as on the forums. And of course, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. Chris, where can we find you?
You can find me pretty much everywhere in the social media world under the username C. Brian Jones. That's Brian with a Y. Twitter is probably my biggest hangout. So, you know, hit me up over there on Twitter where I talk about Star Trek and music and sports ball and Japan and all kinds of stuff all the time. And if you do follow me, send me a net reply and say hello. And I love to chat. I don't necessarily notice everyone who just follows but doesn't talk to me, because I'm really about interaction. So look me up over there.
Well, everyone, we want to thank you so much for joining us again. We want to continue to thank you for reviewing us on iTunes. If you do have a chance, please do that, so it'll help people find us on the strange inner workings of the iTunes store and how it recommends podcasts. That does help other people find the show. Chris, you know how crazy it is.
Which, after about 2.5 years of podcasting, I still have no idea how that works.
So to the listeners, we say live long and read on.
You call that light reading?
To each his own, number one.